I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! It's over! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again.
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm,
and he got it. Young ball continues to wear him out.
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Good. We're just about a month. It looks like it's going to happen. We're just about a month away from basketball activities starting to ramp up, and maybe like a month and a half away from Cleveland Cavaliers basketball. Felt all but impossible.
Carter, I have to cut you off. I'm sorry. I don't want to gut our momentum right at the start here, but sure. I think we do have a responsibility to be responsible. And right now, it's such an awkward place to podcast because we're waiting on the results of the votes. We don't know what the case is going to be. But Thursday, we're expecting the players to vote for December 22nd start date. I mean, we're in limbo, though. Like we don't know what's going to happen, but all we're anticipating is that on Thursday, the players are going to agree to the December 22nd start date. I believe that's a 72-game season as well as play-in games, which I find interesting as hell, and likely a December 1st start date to camp. And the place I want to start this at is actually the possibility that the transaction freeze is going to go away basically as soon as this starts. I know Keith Smith had mentioned that it could be as soon as Friday. I guess the precedent in lockout seasons is once that CBA is in place, things can start happening, and we might have real basketball news very, very soon.
Yeah, well, I mean, it just makes sense. You know, like, honestly, the earlier they can get the transaction window going, the better, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is going to be a crazy compressed off season. Like, obviously, free agency we know can't happen until after the draft, and that is going to really constrict things heading into camp. But with that said, like, yeah, it's time to get moving. You know, if you're going to do this, you're going to do this. And you know, part of me worries that it's a little bit rushed. But like, also, I found that I've been working in a business in COVID. You've been working in a business in COVID, like. There is a degree of like best laid plans, but you got to like make calls. You got to make hard decisions. And it feels like this is one that the league is not like probably super thrilled about structurally. And we know the players and front offices are not thrilled about structurally, but it's like getting back to normalcy is what's going to probably, you know, and lose the least amount of money in the short term is really probably the goal here. And I don't know. It makes sense. It's just crazy. It's crazy that it's happening as fast as it is.
Yeah. And I don't think it's going to be out of the norm either. Like, we have seen post lockout basketball before. We've seen it be sloppy. It's frankly, it's sloppy at the start of season anyway. And assuming we're still going to get a little bit of a preseason, which is
three
one
games,
of the,
I believe.
Yeah. Three games for the preseason. I think teams are going to be a little more ready for this than they normally would be. I mean, the nice thing is there was the layoff before the bubble for the teams that were in the bubble. So there isn't the 82 game load on their body plus playoffs plus this quick turnaround. So I think it's going to be tough for some teams, but the teams that weren't in the bubble, the Delete Eight, they all had their mini camps. They're basically getting two training camps here. A lot of these other guys have had time off. And I think the most attractive part of this December 22nd start date is for the players, now you don't have to worry about a rush start for next season. Assuming that we can get COVID under wraps, you're getting your summer back. You're getting the option to play in the Olympics. I know they're keeping that open. I'm skeptical, but the schedule gets normal again. You can plan for the summer. The summer is more likely to be COVID-free than December. So if you're delaying it another month, it's not like you're going to be able to go out there and live normal life. You want to do that in the summer.
Yeah, and in fairness, as you noted, like even the bubble teams, like I think should probably be fine. You know, most of the bubble teams were knocked out quick. You know, you know, you think about the 8 that got knocked out in the first round and the 4 that didn't make it to the playoffs at all. And really, you start looking at the teams that are really affected, it's probably the teams who made it the deepest, which is kind of the case anyway. Like it's more compressed, sure, but like, you know, there also was a cool 6 months with nothing prior to that. So, you know, yes, I'm sure that the Lakers are fatigued from being in the bubble, but like, I'm not so sure it's like this terrible, you know, stressor, you know, an abnormally big stressor on their bodies with the shorter layoff.
You know what I think it is? Honestly, I think the biggest stressor is just how regimented everything's going to be. There's going to be protocols in place. They're once again be going to probably staying in hotels and COVID precautions coming in place. I think it's the biggest fatigue is likely going to be a mental thing, especially for the players that really didn't enjoy the bubble. Obviously, we're not going the bubble route, but I do think that is going to be the bigger test versus kind of the physical test. Like these guys, let's be honest, they're out there, they're playing basketball every single day, no matter what. The real difference is how structured it's going to be, how hard they're going to have to play. But with all of that, the part that I find really exciting is I think there's real opportunity here, as with every workforce, for real structural change for the NBA season. And we've kind of heard some of the ideas that they're toying around with. And I'm excited to see what regular seasons look like moving forward, because I do think that there's really positive changes that could be made there.
Do you think there's a world in which they pilot, or are you basically suggesting that you think they're piloting a 72-game season and using this as an excuse?
I think that might be part of it. I think some of the things they might pilot, one thing I'm really in favor of is more series throughout an NBA season. So similar to what baseball does, maybe you only do this for your conference opponents where you play, let's say you play your 4 games against Milwaukee, you play 2 in Milwaukee, you play your 2 in Cleveland, and that's your season series for the Bucks. Now, obviously, there's some downsides to it. Maybe you don't have a player available that week and it kind of hurts you there. I don't think that's feasible with cross-conference games. Like, you're still going to have your West Coast trips and whatnot. But I do think eliminating travel, or not eliminating travel, but reducing travel, we saw what a positive impact that could make in the bubble. And I think that should be a priority. Like, it's much easier to do back-to-backs if both of those games are in Milwaukee. Like, if you're not traveling between those games, that becomes a whole lot more feasible, and that can open up opportunities for rest throughout the season. If you're compacting the season, maybe you have these play-in tournaments, which I'm interested to see what the rules will be for that. But I think if you make the pivot to those within-season series against teams, you're going to see a little bit more playoff basketball, because teams do not game plan to the same degree when it comes to the regular season. And I think seeing adjustments throughout the regular season, it's going to give teams a better idea of what their needs are at the trade deadline. It's going to give you a better idea of how you match up against teams. And I think it's going to help revive some interest in the regular season. I really think it would be a positive change, and it's one I'm hoping they make.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. And, you know, it's one that, you know, you kind of go one way or the other where it's like, okay, it's kind of a bummer to, you know, just get your ass kicked by like the Lakers 3 times in a row. Or twice true. In a row. But like at the same time, like I think the biggest thing that, you know, we talk about when we talk about the NBA is like there's just no, like the regular season can feel a little disconnected and nebulous. And this definitely, that theory of a series does kind of help create these little mini narratives that, you know, everyone can kind of latch onto, as opposed to, you know, only the diehards who are able to see those kinds of trends. Mm-hmm. And playing the same team, like, I even like home and homes, like, when my team is playing the same team twice in a row. Because, like, oh, this is a little interesting experience. So, You know, I think there's some degree that it makes sense. I think that the quality of play is very clearly damaged. But one thing I do want to say, though, is that I also think the lack of fans in the depth perception could have played just as much of a factor into the quality of play.
Oh, 100%.
As the travel. So, you know, it's just hard to know. It's very hard to know what, you know, it's correlation is not causation, but
yeah but I don't really it's see also any hard not to dispute try. That travel does have some effect on the body. Like I think
100%.
It's hard to dispute that. And I think the other thing, like, let's be honest, we're at the end of the day, you and I are fans and we're also content producers. And I think from a content production standpoint, you can sell like an event week against a team. We can have
home
a guest
series.
Yeah, we can have a guest on. Tell us about this team. Tell us about some of the matchups we're going to see over this next week. You can build it like an event, which you're never going to be able to do it to the same degree as the NFL. But I do think having that sort of thing going on, it makes it more easy to digest. You're able to preview your matchup against the team, interesting storylines, and then you're kind of invested throughout the week versus if you're playing four different teams in 7 days, it's hard to produce relevant content that has any lifespan.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, necessity is the mother of invention, right? Like, you know, the play-in tournament to the playoffs was a shitty Bill Simmons column idea for years and years and years. And a lot of people made fun of it. And it was always like, oh, yeah, I'll bet they'll try that. And, you know, even Silver, the ultimate Twitter commissioner and tinkerer, wasn't going to do it until he had a great excuse to do it. Mm-hmm. Turns out it was pretty fun. And I think that, you know, that's where they kind of found that, okay, like this is a thing we might want to explore, which, by the way, matters for teams like the Cavs who are going to be looking to try to start winning some games in the very near future. Mm-hmm. It might be in that play-in kind of window. I think that similarly with series, like this is a great era for the tinker commissioner of Adam Silver, right? Like mm-hmm. he can try shit and like no one's going to hold it against him really, you know, like, and that's really great because like, frankly, like, I mean, we've been very critical of Adam Silver and kind of him listening to Twitter too much, being a little too meddlesome. But like in this instance, it's like, it doesn't really hurt us much. Cause like, if it sucks, it's like, well, it's already a weird year. So who cares?
Exactly. And I think this is the right time to experiment. Now, the play-in tournament part I find really interesting because I think it was definitely a success, but I think some of the reason we were into it was because there was that 5-month break from the regular season. There were so many games kind of there. We understood that, hey, we didn't get the full sample size we were anticipating. This might be a bit of a substitute. I do think that, I mean, when you're talking about 7, 8, 9, 10, these aren't teams that are going to be winning the championship. So I don't think it really impacts the legitimacy of your eventual champion. I don't think that it, like, if there's an upset 10-7, I don't think that's going to change how you feel about the champion. I just don't. But at the same time, I would be interested to see some kind of guidelines on it. Like, if the gap is that massive, I don't know if I'm totally into those teams playing their playoffs, because I assume it's going to be the same structure where you play two games and the higher seed just has to win one of those two games. But I mean, we know basketball, we know hot and cold streaks, especially in the 3-point era, that can lead to a crazy variance.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. But like that's kind of the nice thing about it for me. And I definitely warmed up. I was pretty not into it prior. Like there's already too many teams that make the playoffs in the NBA, you know, and that's a big gripe people have about it. But ultimately, you know, I think what's kind of nice is we talked a lot about this season being like our palate cleanser season, our let's go find us some new stories and things to care about and be interested in the wake of the, you know, the KD Warriors kind of flattening out every other narrative. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, to that end, like teams that make a run, you know, like let's just say hypothetically the Suns had finished the bubble and gotten into the play-in tournament,
yeah,
and then won, like that's something that like now matters and adds to their intrigue going forward. And like, if nothing else, aren't we just looking for reasons to give a shit?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I think so much of the ratings conversation is done in bad faith. And because it's done that way, I think it turns people off of discussing legitimate issues with the NBA. And even if you don't want to characterize them as issues, let's say areas for improvement. I do think to some extent you're reaching the end of the LeBron era in the NBA, and moving forward, there's so much young talent, but there's also a bit of a blank canvas. Like you really have the opportunity to go out there and experiment. And this season might prove to be the perfect opportunity to do that. So I am really for them kind of experimenting and seeing what works, because as you said before, they have the cover of, if this all sucks, you can just go back to the way things were before, because everyone's going to understand that, hey, we're trying to do in a pandemic. Everybody's making adjustments to how they do what they do. The NBA is going to do the same thing. So I'm for it. I'm really excited. Like I'm really, really excited for the transaction window to open up. I'm excited for the draft. I'm excited for the team to start playing. I'm excited to be right about Darius Garland. There's just so many things to look forward to.
And I guess I'm going to be wrong, since apparently I hate him.
Yeah, you're all the way out on him. We've clarified this.
So infuriating. That one actually bugs me. Sometimes I pretend like things bug me.
Oh, really?
For the pod, but I resent this being treated as gospel, because I think you really think it. I don't think you're doing a bit. I don't think it's like, I mean, it might be a bit because it annoys me, but I really think you think that I'm out on Garland, and I think that's bullshit.
You know, I hate that you're making, so you stepped on my election joke earlier, and now you're making me kind of break character for a second here. So I really resent you right now. I don't think you're out on Garland.
Thanks.
So you know what? Way to ruin that. But you know what? When you have a coworker, you got to make sure that you're treating him right. And I just want to make sure I'm doing that here.
Yeah. Thanks. Are you going to go ahead and go to your segue now?
Is it that transparent? Well, you know what?
It's pretty transparent.
No, it's transparent when you have unfilled positions with your company, and that's why Indeed has you covered. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever, and Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world, because Indeed gives you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the most important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st. Carter.
I don't want it to be let go that you said you know what is transparent when you have a job opening at your company. Just absolute nonsense out of you. You know,
well, you know what? Like the transition I had in my mind, it didn't come to fruition because you called me out on it. So I had to call an audible.
I was actually bummed that you cut me off there, because I was getting ready to make a similar joke. But it's fine. Football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Justin.
Yes.
I almost did it. I almost put a sizable bet down on Biden plus 180 early on Tuesday evening, when things were really swinging in the markets were swinging hard towards Trump. And I thought, no, that's bad juju.
Mm-hmm.
I bet Hillary to win Florida in 2016, and that didn't work. So I felt like maybe I shouldn't touch American political proceedings with my with my gambling anymore.
Probably a good call. I have never.
But you could have done it on Bet Online.
Yeah. So, yes, you could. I was enjoying the lines throughout the night. It was very interesting.
So I just want to note for people who like were losing their mind about that. They're they're setting up these crazy things just to get you to sign up. I guarantee you, a lot of those lines had very limited investment ceilings. Like they no odds maker swings that hard every 5 minutes.
Yeah, kind of felt like generating action.
Oh yeah, which is smart. Smart from our dear friends at Bet Online.
Yeah, well, I mean, they got to be smart. They're investing in us, which I mean,
hell yeah, brother.
Is there a better investment out there? I don't know. Maybe a better investment is Gordon Hayward, who Ryan Russillo mentioned on the Bill Simmons podcast that he, I think he reported it. I don't know. I hate aggregating podcasts. Please don't ever aggregate us unless it's going to go viral. And
no, aggregate us. We could use the word of mouth.
Please let everybody know about us. Let them know what we're talking about when we sound smart. But yeah, he basically said that Gordon Hayward wants out of Boston, which of course kind of reignited some of the conversations we've had about would you be open to an Andre Drummond for Gordon Hayward swap? Because obviously Boston looked fantastic with Kemba, Smart, Jalen, and Tatum. And I mean, Tice is very good, but that's kind of the clear spot where they want to upgrade. They've been linked to Miles Turner. They've been linked to Andre Drummond. I'm pro this. I really think that Hayward would be great for the development of the young guys, even if it is for a year. So I guess the conversation at that point becomes, what else are you willing to part with?
So I think there's a couple of elements to the Hayward thing. I think we should talk about his fit first. And then talk about kind of the price that we're comfortable paying. Because for me, Hayward's fit is excellent for a lot of reasons. The team is very small on the wings, and they're not very switchy or flexible in their lineups right now. They don't have a lot of, you know, 2-3, 3-4 hybrids that actually should be playing those positions. You know, poor Jetty Osmond played power forward for this team in the recent future. Like they don't have a lot of positional flexibility when matchups call for it. They don't have any good defenders on the wing. Hayward's a very, very good defender. Their weakness, you know, they're probably their best young prospect production wise is Colin Sexton right now. And Sexton's glaring weakness is that he is a very, very below average playmaker. That's okay if he's paired with one of the best point forward, you know, playmaker types that we have at the three position. In the non-superstar realm, I think the other thing that plays into the Cavs' favor with Hayward is that he is on an expiring deal if he opts in. And this is someone who has had injury problems and is looking for some long-term security, my guess would be. The Cavs can offer that. There's just a lot. The other thing that's great about Hayward, if they do indeed trade Andre Drummond for him, is they are way less obligated to take a wing in the draft. Mm-hmm. And much more open to take our favorite prospect, Onyeka Okongwu.
Yeah.
So there's just 1,000 reasons why this makes a lot of sense for the Cavs. Now,
and it opens the door to re-signing Tristan. Like at that point, because there's mutual interest, you have to imagine if Drummond is out the door, even if you're drafting Okongwu, let's be honest, the training camps are going to start 2 weeks after you're drafted. These rookies were already going to take time to develop, just like last year's class, maybe more. And now with the short turnaround time, they're going to need a ton of time. I don't think you're going to see a lot of day one starters unless it's just a very poor situation they're being drafted to.
I totally agree.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. I think Hayward makes a ton of sense. The other part about not taking a wing, and let's be clear, there's no real outcome in this year's draft that's going to make me lose my mind. I think the only one would be if Ball fell to 5 and the Cavs kept him. It doesn't seem likely Anthony Edwards is falling to 3.
I think it's cool that you're sneaking in that you're okay with Toppin.
Here's the thing. So I've been talking about this. We've been talking about this the last few weeks. So I don't think anything we say is new at this point because this has been just the longest offseason of all time. I don't think Toppin's going to be a bust. So I hate his fit. I hate the opportunity cost with it. I don't think he's going to be a bust. I think he works very well with this team offensively. I think you get like 90% John Collins, and Atlanta fans have fun watching John Collins, and Toppin would be fun for us. I just hate the opportunity cost with it. But the other part of this is I'm going to learn from my mistakes in the past. And I lost my mind about Colin Sexton. And at this point, I trust what the Cavs scouts and draft team is doing, because I really like the crop of guys they brought in. I was wrong about Sexton. Kevin Porter Jr. is obvious hit. Dylan Windler, they seem to be very high on. Garland, I still think it is going to pan out. So I'm going to give some benefit of the doubt. I don't want, especially because I don't watch college basketball, I rely on the opinions of others. And when we have people like Wasserman and other draft people say, you know what, Toppin isn't going to be as bad on defense as people say, I have a hard time believing it, because he moves like the damn Tin Man out there. But I'm going to give some benefit of the doubt. I'm just not going to be happy about it.
So I'm still not happy about a Toppin pick, but I will say Chris is, when we had Chris Manning and Evan Damrell from Locked On Cavs in the pod last week, Chris's assertion that if you draft Toppin, you just kind of restart the clock on the rebuild and really start moving the vets out, you know, the Loves and the Nances, to give this guy room. Like, it's like, okay, I don't like that strategy, but that at least makes some sense to me. You know, the idea of drafting
Toppin,
you're going
real young at that point.
The idea of drafting Toppin to try to compete would be a real disappointment to me. But the idea of drafting him to kind of reset the core and start building around, you know, your young guards and him, and like, okay, you can talk me into that. But I almost feel like we lost the thread. We're talking about Hayward. And yeah, and I still want to go back to that.
We will.
Yeah, so let's get back to it. My question with Hayward is, what is the appropriate price? It's been pretty clear from reporting, and frankly, like, it always felt a little clear to me that Drummond and Hayward straight up was not going to happen. Even if you save Celtics some money, sure, but like, come on, like, it's a center in a league that doesn't really value centers, even in the post Lakers world. And Hayward is still someone who's liked in Boston and makes a lot of sense on that roster. And just like, frankly, this is better, has a better reputation. Drummond was traded for pennies this last season. It's not surprising that his trade value isn't that high. So, like, what is the appropriate amount? Lowe mentioned on his podcast that he would guess something like a Drummond, Jetty, and some draft compensation. And he kept it very vague on draft compensation. What's your minimum that you're able, you know, what's the minimum that gets the deal done for you?
So I think the first asset that comes to mind, I'm fine giving up Jetty. I mean, he is our large adult son, but at the same time, there is a glut of wings, and I still anticipate the Cavs being a lottery team. We've covered that many times. I think they're going to be better than people expect, but I still think they're going to be in the mix of the lottery, and next year is so damn wing heavy. I think that has to factor in decision making a bit. So giving up Jetty is fine. The first asset that jumps to mind for draft compensation would be the Bucks pick. I mean, you look at the protections of that pick, your best chance of getting any value is if Giannis leaves and then the Bucks are still good, that they're maybe like a 6 seed or a 7 seed with Chris Middleton. Otherwise, that pick is just protected. It's not going to convert, then it's going to turn to second round picks. Who knows? Maybe you can get one of Boston's late first this year as well, because they don't want to hang on to all those. So if you're giving up Drummond, Jetty, and the Milwaukee Bucks pick, and getting like pick 29, and maybe you convert that pick later in the draft to a bunch of future seconds or something like that, because you just don't have the roster space, I'd be fine with something along those lines.
If it's just Drummond, Jetty, and Milwaukee for Hayward straight up,
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with
that. Me too. Yeah. Honestly, and that's the thing, and that, you know, this is, there is, there will be, I imagine that there would be a reaction if that deal were to get done where people would say, a first for Hayward, like, with the amount you're going to have to pay him, with his injury history, like, don't do that. But my thing is, that's why you basically buy firsts. Like, they bought that first rounder.
We got that first. We got that first Delly and John Henson for George Hill. We gave up John Henson for Drummond along with Brandon Knight. You're essentially giving up George Hill for your rental of Drummond and then at least a year of Gordon Hayward in this scenario. I think that's reasonable. And like they got other picks. So like to me, that is a good managing of assets. And the most important thing for this season is the development of Sexton, Garland, and Kevin Porter Jr. And I think Hayward helps that. That's way more important than who they draft. That's why I'm not going to lose my mind about if they take Obi Toppin, because those three, their development is the most important thing. I don't think anything else matters as much as that, because they're still going to be in the lottery mix next year, and that's where you're hoping to get the franchise cornerstone. Or the alternative is one of those three turns into a franchise cornerstone, which I still think is on the table.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what we're talking about by franchise cornerstone. I don't know if that's on the table, but like, you know, I'm actually just into the idea of like, just get good. Get good as best you can, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really care what path it is up the mountain, because we've seen it 1,000 times now where teams like the Torontos of the world are on the periphery of good, on the periphery of good, and then all of a sudden they're good, and then you fight there for a while, and if you have good management, you might be able to take a leap up further. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you don't need to have an uber duber transcendent LeBron James player to succeed in the NBA, even though Cavs fans might start to feel that way after this last, you know, decade and, you know, and a half. But like, ultimately, I just feel like Hayward makes them better. Yeah. He helps everyone on the team get better. And we're going to be hitting a point, and I feel like the Suns were getting close to hitting this point last year, where it was like, they're just so young, mm-hmm. that, and they have so many young guys that it's all getting muddled. It's all becoming a wash, you know? And yeah.
It was okay for them to give up TJ Warren, because even though they didn't get much back from him, and like that transaction on face value sucks for them, at the same time it opened up that playing time for Mikal Bridges. You now know what he is, or have a better idea of it. It gave playing time for Kelly Oubre Jr., who can either be a piece of their future or a trade asset for them. I do agree. I think you're starting to get to that point. And Hayward, what he brings that I really like, and this is actually the reason why, outside of Okongwu, my second favorite prospect for the Cavs is now Denny at this point. Hayward's a guy that can play either forward spot. And I think that's super, super important, because it gives you the versatility that, okay, if your solution at small forward doesn't emerge from the existing roster, Hayward can play there. If your young guys are playing so well that you need to find real minutes for Windler, Kevin Porter Jr., and Sexland, all of a sudden you can play the combinations of those guys with Hayward at the four. And that's what I love about Denny. I think he can be a defender at either position. I think he brings that secondary playmaking. Hayward brings you a more polished version of that skill set. And to me, that's a really, really attractive trait to add to this team.
Yeah, here's the reality, Justin. We know, as Cavs fans, we are invested in the success of four young guys right now. Porter, Garland, Sexton, and Windler. Those are the four developmental projects on the team. We're adding a fifth in 2 weeks. How many more do you need? Like, how many, like, you know what I mean? Like, really, like, I mean, now, it's fair. In fairness, some of those people might fail, and that's just the numbers. And maybe the Cavs need to cut bait, but, like, really, you shouldn't have more than four, even on bad teams, you shouldn't have four or five long-term development guys. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't see the real downside to a Hayward here and a long-term agreement with Hayward here. I just think he just makes too much sense for this team. Yeah, the injury stuff is concerning, but he just makes sense. And I think the Cavs can give him that stability, and I think he's not the kind of guy who's just going to mail it in if the team isn't excellent.
Mm-hmm. Here's the other thing. It's very common, especially when you're talking about the volume of prospects the Cavs have. It's very normal for some of those guys to fail, but for it to not work out, for injuries to come. Maybe their game doesn't translate to the NBA. But you don't ever want to be in a situation where a guy fails, quote unquote, on your team because he wasn't given an opportunity and that guy flourishes elsewhere. You'd rather see them fail, give an opportunity. You provide them with culture and structure, which is what the Cavs are trying to build. That's what they're working towards. That's their goal. You give them that. And if they fail within that structure, then it's easier to cut bait with them versus just not giving the guys the opportunity, taking or bringing in guys that take away from those young prospects. I think next season, we're basically clear. Like, the runway is clear to find out what these guys are. And I think that's why it's so important. It's such an important year for Sexton. It's such an important year for Garland, because if they fail, the team is going to have a bad record because they're so heavily dependent on these young guys. And you're going into a draft, one of the best drafts in recent memory, where, okay, now you know exactly where you stand and what you need to bring in. And one clarification I just want to add, because you had kind of asked about what I meant by franchise cornerstone. To me, it basically means starter and an all-star. Like, I think there's potential within this roster for a guy to go up to that level.
Yeah, just someone to build around, basically, is what we're saying.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, it Sexton is who he was after the all-star break, but just a little more efficient and adds defense. Like, holy shit, that's basically an all-star caliber guy, or at least it's an all-star caliber.
Yeah, a fringe all-star, you know? Like, yeah. I think fringe all-star is probably not someone you want to build around and make a bunch of roster decisions around. You know, let's say you get the Andre Drummond conundrum that the Pistons have been in. But, like, if you can identify someone who's going to be that regular all-star, then, you know, then that makes a lot more sense and is the kind of person where you start making those roster concessions. But right now the Cavs are in no man's land, and that's okay in terms of their roster building. But, like, soon they're going to need to start making some you know, active choices with who's on their roster and how they're going to support them.
No, I totally agree. And you know what? I think we're in a territory where the Milwaukee pick is going to be very similar to the J.R. Smith expiring contract, where
as Cavs fans, better use it, baby.
Yeah, you got to use it, because, I mean, Gambo had reported, I don't know if this is going to happen, but he tweeted today that Giannis is expected to sign a super net max next week, which we've talked about before. If that happens, I think it's good for the health of the league. I think it's another positive sign, but, like, that kind of puts a bit of a question mark on how good that pick's going to be, because Giannis in Milwaukee means a pretty good team.
Yeah, I mean, either way, it's just, like, I don't know, man. It just kind of goes back to my, like, whether it's going to be great or not. Like, one, it's pretty protected, so it can't be amazing, first off. Like, we know we're not getting a first overall pick or something with it, even if the Bucks bought him out. And then, second off, it just kind of goes to the, like, we're going to have five young guys that we're rooting for. And, like, even if two of them don't work out, like, you're still going to be drafting. It's not like the Cavs are giving up any of their own picks on this road anytime soon, and I wouldn't recommend they do. So, yeah. Like, I just don't really see the downside here, ultimately, for trading that pick. I mean, you could talk opportunity cost in terms of, you are going to have to pay, you know, you might have to extend Gordon Hayward on, like, a 4-year, $25 million a year kind of extension. But, like, that's the kind of extension we were trying to figure out if they were going to give Andre Drummond, who we're much less high on collectively. And, like, yeah, it's not ideal cap management. But I don't think Love is long for this team, ultimately. His numbers will be coming off the books soon. You know, I don't think they'll be, even if they re-sign Tristan to a big number, I don't think it'll be a long-term deal if it's a big number. I don't know. It just makes too much sense to me. And frankly, I'm ready for the Cavs. I don't want the Cavs to make ill-advised decisions, but I do want the Cavs to start taking steps towards being more consistently competitive.
Yeah, if they overachieve this season and manage to sneak into the 8th seed or something like that, I'm not here for anybody complaining about it. I could not give less of a shit, because, as I've said before, if that happens, it means the young guys are good enough to actually really care about, and Cavs are going to have some free agency flexibility at that point. And yeah, one thing I just want to add before we wrap. I don't need a Hayward extension to do that deal. I just think it's good enough for the development of the team. It's not a central part for me.
And frankly, if your culture is where you need it to be, and you're offering him security that he likely will not be getting elsewhere, it just makes a lot of sense. You know, yeah. I just don't think, like, maybe this is like being a little dismissive, but I don't think teams in the cap positions are historically the kind of teams that get those guarantees from players. They earn them.
No. Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Like, let's be honest, if it's something where it doesn't happen before the season or the trade happens before the season, but no extension, if this team overachieves, that looks really, really good for Gordon Hayward. Like, that is a massive image boost. If he can stay healthy and he's part of a team that everyone kind of perceives as a bottom feeder, if you're a part of them being really good, you might be able to leverage your way to another good situation at the trade deadline. The Cavs could get assets there, or it might just be the synergy you're looking for with an organization, and you're able to move forward with them. So I'm completely open to it. I think it would be good. I personally don't really like Gordon Hayward, but as a player, it's just such a good fit that it makes a ton of sense for me.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Let's go get him.
Let's go get him. Carter, you know what?
Call, Kobe.
You know what? It was really nice podcasting with just you again. We've gone really guest heavy, and it's nice to just get this chase down rhythm that we got going on here.
Love you, boo.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to say that back. I'm going to hurt your feelings because you were feeling insecure today, and I want to keep you on your toes. but I do love all our listeners. I want to thank you guys all for supporting us. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs official Discord chat.
That made it meaner, by the way.
Thank you.
I don't love you, but I do love our listeners. Just so you know.
Okay, love you, buddy. All right, if you want to support the podcast, best way to do so is by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. We'll obviously be ramping up a lot of fun conversations in there, and you'll also get the chance to impact what we talk about on the podcast, because we love getting feedback from our listeners. So however you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Big thanks to Carter. Thanks to all our listeners. Until next time, go Cavs.